In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com and get up to 15% off your first purchase as a member with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for up to 15% off your first purchase as a member.
One size fits all seemed like a good idea for clothes.
Nice dress.
It's a t-shirt.
Until you tried it on. Same goes for your healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers a variety of flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. So whether you're between jobs, coming off a parent's plan, or even missed open enrollment, you can find the plan that fits you best. Find out more about United Healthcare coverage at uh1.com. That's uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hello and welcome to the Stompcast with me, Dr. Alex George. This is the podcast where I go for a walk with a guest to take a wander into their life. This week I'm stomping with Lily Silverton. Lily is a mindset and life coach who has developed a unique approach to goal setting, which could lead to a happier and more purpose-driven life. It's called the priorities method. So many of us get lost with what we actually want because of work and relationships. So the priorities method is designed to focus you on making decisions from your values rather than whatever your end goal might be. In particular, making sure we don't follow society's goals or other people's ideas of what we should achieve. In this episode, I'm looking forward to finding out from Lily how this method works, the benefits of approaching life in this way, and what throwing goals out of the window might actually look like. Now, when I first heard of this idea, the big thing for me around priorities is that I'm really interested in actually that we should live our lives based on what we truly want, what matters to us, and that if you're going to try to achieve anything in your life, it needs to come from a place of purpose and something you care about, because otherwise that's why we fall upon the wayside. You know, we set a goal and don't achieve it, and then we beat ourselves up because we didn't achieve that goal. So I was really excited to have Lily on the podcast to talk about this, something I'm really interested in, and I hope actually I'll learn a few things along the way too. So in the three parts, we're going to talk about how to prioritize what you actually want, what do priorities look like, how do we define them. In the second part, why perhaps we should stop setting goals, and if we do continue to set goals, how we decide what they should look like. And the third part, I'm really interested in this point around self-worth. Is our self-worth attached to our achievements? Should it be? Or perhaps there's another way. This is going to be a great conversation. Guys, I also want to say a huge thank you. Loads of messages over the last few weeks. I've just come off the back of having illness. It wasn't life-threatening, but I was in and out of hospital and all these things. It has been a bit of a knockback. I really appreciate how much love I've had from the Stompcast community and the general community online and in person as well. I'm very much grateful for that. Also, thank you to everyone that's been writing in and emailing, DMing suggestions of where we can, you know, film the Stompcast, because you might have seen that we've had some challenges getting permission to be able to film out in these parks and things, which is slightly frustrating. Certain parks wanting upwards of like £5,000 a day to record, to film the Stompcast. You know, it's a couple of us walking around. We want to film it because a lot of you have asked for it to be filmed, because some people can't access, there might be physical disability, there's reasons they can't access nature. They want to be able to see the Stompcast. And we'd like to make that happen. So thank you to people that have reached out. And if you do have a suggestion, do email abby@dralexgeorge.co.uk or DM the Stompcast page with any suggestions of where in the London region that we can film and record. Thank you so much. Let's get cracking with this episode. It's going to be a great one. Let's go. Lily, welcome to the Stompcast. We're recording this at the end of April. It should be a very warm day. It's a bit blustery, but the sun's shining.
The sun is shining. The sun is out. We're very happy.
And actually, as I said, there's a ray of sunshine.
I know. Look at us, bathed.
Well, thank you for joining me. I've really been excited to have you on. Ever since really I saw your priorities method, and the reason I'm really interested in this, and you've written the priorities method, self-published actually, which we'll talk about a little bit as well, the journal, kind of looking at how people decide what they want in life, thinking about whether perhaps our goal is the best way of deciding, you know, what to do with your life, and perhaps how we should live by values. And I'm interested in that because, as you know, on the Stompcast, listeners, that I feel things like New Year's resolutions, creating quite hard and fast goals and things, can actually be quite damaging to our happiness, and often we set ourselves up to fail. So I've been really interested in hearing from you a little bit about your priorities method and how we can actually use that to construct a life that we want, and that we feel fulfilled, that we don't constantly feel, you know, that we're failing. Like I said to you just as we were getting mic'd up there, that to be honest, like 2023 was a very, very hard year for a lot of people. For me, it was, I often say, the best and worst year of my life. I faced a lot of my demons, but I also had a lot of my growth in that year. Started 2024 thinking, right, it's a clean slate, let's get going. Didn't set any goals or anything like that, but I had intentions and things that I wanted to focus on. And to be honest, it has been a little bit one thing after the other. And like in the last month, I've had been hospitalized twice, food poisoning, and there's lots of other things that have happened and outside that. And it's easy to end up quite despondent and think, well, the world's against you, which I don't think that way. I'm very grateful for life, and I push on. But if you did have very hard and fast goals, you could think, well, now I'm into April, end of April, and it's all up shit's creek.
Absolutely.
I mean, you've had a very interesting career, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Why are you so passionate about it? You've got a hat on saying priorities on it. You clearly care about this. Why do you think it's important? And perhaps could you start just explaining a little bit of the concept of, yeah, what are we talking about here?
With the priorities method. Yeah. Okay, I'm sorry you've had a hard year. Hard start to the year.
Listen, life is always life. People work life off, worse off. But it's just my experience. Yeah, I've had a little bit of one thing after the other. It's life.
But
it's
it's such a good thing to mention because I'm sure it's so familiar to so many people, that experience of having all great intentions and then everything goes a little bit too, can I swear?
Yeah.
Shit.
Everything. Yeah, okay. Yeah, please do. Everything just starts throwing at you. And again, I've said, like with my illness, like the health stuff the last couple of weeks, it's not been life-threatening illnesses, but it still just feels like batter, like small chip at the block after chip at the block, and you get a bit fed up.
It's life impacting.
Get a bit fed up. But yeah. Sorry. Go on, tell me.
So, the priorities method. The priorities method, I've been coaching for about 8 years, and before that I was doing all sorts of stuff I can talk about later, but I started off with a very traditional goal-setting method, and sort of that resonated with me, both personally and how I worked for a while. And then I started to feel like people were coming and they were setting goals, but then maybe I'd speak to them in a couple of months and they weren't necessarily achieving them. So part of that's obviously accountability, but also I felt part of it was that the goals they were setting didn't really have a great foundation to them. And I sort of landed on this idea of priorities. I think about priorities a lot. I always have linked him with sort of values and principles and just what's really important to you. Because essentially what is important to us and what we prioritize both mentally in our internal world and our external world, how we sort of go about our days, makes up the sum of our life, right? Like what we do day to day makes up the sum of our existence. So we better be prioritizing the stuff we love. And then I moved it into a very specific approach with sort of principles and the way in which I work with people, both one-on-one or in big groups or even through my writing as well. It all comes down to this idea of how can we prioritize more helpful thoughts, more helpful behaviors, more helpful habits, and, you know, go after the things that are really, really important to us from this really brilliant foundation or compass or GPS or whatever the word that resonates with you is, while also acknowledging that life can be very difficult and life can throw up all sorts of curveballs.
There's always something, isn't there? And I think
there's
that point.
Something.
Sorry to interject, but I read this thing the other day that the key to finding happiness in life is accepting that there will always be challenges, but being able to face your challenges while still finding joy, a meaning, an experience. Because actually, like if you think about your whole life, if I asked you like 10 years ago, was there something you're facing? I guarantee you, there's something every year. There's a challenge, something that's ongoing. Someone's ill in the family, or you know, your career's great, but your relationship's a mess. It's always something. And it's learning to somehow find joy despite that. And perhaps that does link into your priorities, because if you understand what your priorities are, you think, well, actually, I am living each day by the values that I care about, and therefore I am deriving some joy. Whereas if you're looking at goals, you're like, well, it's all a mess.
Yeah, it's all a mess. I've messed it up. It's, you know, it's really external validation, which of course is really important to all of us, and it's something that we you know, that we all go after and naturally do and always will, probably, to varying degrees. However, if you do have more of that values-based, priorities-based foundation, then I guess you're less likely to get completely rocked by big or small life events because, yeah, as you say, like, we expect life to be easy, and life is not easy. You know, it proves to us all the time that it's not, and that it is a challenge, and yet we have this idea of this is how it should be.
I think that growing up, I've just been in Wales for the weekend with my family, and you obviously spend time being nostalgic, and, you know, I was driving around seeing some of the old places that I used to spend time or live or whatever, and you often think, oh gosh, you know, when I was that age, I thought life was so simple, and you kind of look back with rose-tinted glasses, and you have certain thoughts of like, oh well, when at that time all I had to worry about was this, and perhaps you wonder, you know, why does life become complex? But actually, life was always the same. The world was always there. It was our experience, our outlook that changed what was. Like, there's always been wars. There's always been difficult things going on. There's always been good things going on. There's always, if you look out there, there's beauty and there's positivity everywhere. But it's our, like, internal reality, really, that changes as we get older. And I wonder whether part of that is because we do suddenly, you know, you're 13, 14, everyone says, right, what are you going to be when you grow up? What's your job going to be? And, well, by the age of 30, I want to have... I remember being like, by the age of 30, I want to have kids, and I want to have my career sorted, I want to have my sports car. And I'm single at 33, no kids, you know, and actually no sports car. So...
So, do you want the sports car still?
Actually, I do love cars, but I live in London, so perhaps not so sensible to have a sports car. But, you know, that point is that I wonder how much of it is it because we set all these goals that and we don't actually focus on what our day-to-day priorities are. Is that why we end up feeling a bit dejected in life? You know, when you're 33.
I think there's definitely that idea of getting to your late 20s, early 30s, of like, what is this? I'm a grown up, and what I've been thinking about, and what I think, the places I thought I would be at this point, I may not be meeting those goals for various reasons.
Are you where you thought you would be? Can I ask how old you are?
I'm 40.
You're 40. At 40 years
40.
Old.
You're 40.
You don't look 40.
Couple
I'll tell you
months,
that.
Thank you.
At 40 years old, or nearly 40, are you where you thought you would be?
I'm not where I thought I would be. However, I'm very satisfied with where I am. I do feel content. When I was younger, I thought I'd have a very different career. So that's probably something I thought. I studied politics and was training as a human rights lawyer. So that was sort of where I thought I would go. And then I was in magazines for a long time and thought I'd be an editor. So these were sort of the goals. So having this more...
And you still are. You still write for the Evening...
I do, and for Vogue, and I write.
You write, and you
but
blog.
But I thought I'd have a very clear career in which I was sort of the head of something.
Right, I see. So unless you climb into, you join a big paper or magazine, you climb to the top, you're now the editor of Vogue, whatever it would be like.
Exactly.
You mean like almost like a stepwise ladder.
Yes, exactly. I had a very clear idea of what I thought
and
that
perhaps
would be.
Like my parents and the generations before ours would have quite like stepwise careers. Perhaps is that, because I think about my mum joined the bank and she worked in the bank for her life, and my dad joined the police and did that, and they kind of, you climb the ladder. And I wonder almost if part of it is how the world has changed. People don't tend to work in one career. It was very, very unusual that someone will enter one career and be in that career for the rest of their lives. Very unusual.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, and I guess, I mean, I run my own business, so I am at the top of my, of that step ladder. It's just my own little, there's no steps. I do. I think there's a big thing around your 30s that a lot of those sorts of help. And of course, like into your 40s as well, depending on what's going on. And I do believe that this idea of priorities, so that you are thinking more about what you want to prioritize, about what's important to you, can just really help ground you.
Let's start on that point. What is a priority? Because to me, priorities, priority, singular, to me, that means something you really care about. That is something to you very important. Is that what you see it as? Is that how you define that?
Yeah, it is what I see it as. So the definition of priority is is of one, there can only be one priority, yes, which is obviously something that's...
I'm really glad you say that, because I've, and keen listeners of the Stompcast will know that I get, I've said before, people often say like, oh, I've got these different priorities for this, that and the other, and they have like 10 different priorities. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, you can only have one. Priority means singular.
It does mean singular, but...
So do you playfully use priorities?
Playfully use priorities. And also, of course, like you will have a priority within different areas of your life.
Yes,
because you won't just have one.
Of course you will.
One, but yeah, it's what's the most important. And I guess I also think of it very much in the work that I do as being tied in with what resonates with you, the values that you have, and also what's going to be helpful for you.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Did this come from your own experience then? Because you kind of, fine, university, you were looking into like political writing, you worked in journalism in different aspects, and then 2017, 2018, you've moved into coaching effectively, and you've ended up writing, you know, this journal you've self-published, which is amazing. We will talk about that a little bit as what that actually means, because if you're not from the book world, you're like, what do you mean self-published? why did you decide to move into this from where you were? And is it because your priorities changed?
Yeah.
Did you kind of go, right, this isn't what I want to do?
Yeah, pretty much. So I was in my early 30s and I was working at...
We'll get run over by cyclists in this bit, so I'm saving your life. My priority is keeping you alive.
Thanks, I really appreciate that. I was working in a magazine and the next step would have been editor. And I was working at a fashion magazine as their features director, and there was a lot of travel. So lots of going to fashion weeks and lots of going all over the world, art weeks, which was incredible. And I absolutely loved throughout my 20s. But I got to my early 30s, had a big breakup, which obviously always makes you reassess things, and looked at what I was doing and thought, where do I really see myself in 10 years' time? I really don't want to still be here. Mm. I don't want to be editor anymore. I thought that's what I wanted, but now I'm getting to that point. It's really not what I want. And I'd done yoga since I was a kid. Mm. My parents did it. And so I went and did my yoga teacher training while still at the magazines. My editor at the time, Rankin, was really kind and let me sort of continue to work from there. Did my meditation training and was instantly really drawn to the thought change, thought repatterning, behavioral change side of things. So I did a few mindfulness courses which had coaching in it, and then I had really bad mental health when I was younger and really struggled with my thought processes and sense of self-worth and sort of understanding of my place in the world, and never thought that I could change my thoughts. So when I had this sort of realization through that, I just immediately was completely drawn to this, to the mindset side of coaching, and how, you know, of course therapy can be so impactful and is so important, and I've done it myself, but there's also something about coaching which is kind of less of a commitment in one way and a little bit more accessible and very, very action.
It's a very good point. Focused. Let's answer that question. Mm. What's the difference between therapy and coaching? What is coaching? If someone hasn't tried it or hasn't had life coaching of any kind, what does it mean?
Coaching is about supporting someone, empowering someone to figure things out for themselves, which I think any good therapist is very similar as well. I would say that coaching is very action focused. Mm. So how can we, you know, change this thought? How can we look at this behavior, this habit? How can we look at what you want to do and see how we can map out, you know, structures of habits and behavioral patterns and accountability stuff so that you can get there?
Mm. I guess also therapy is a medical intervention, isn't it? Therapy, as depending on what like type of therapy you have and so on, generally you are trying to fix a problem, if you'll allow me loosely to use that word, whereas perhaps a coaching, you're trying to take someone that maybe doesn't identify or have illness or mental illness, but they're trying to build upon their lives, right? That's kind of how I see it.
Yeah.
When I work
with any clients, I sort of ask some very brief questions about mental health and if there's anything there that's ongoing and present at that time that seems quite serious, then I would only work with them if they also had a therapist alongside them.
To kind of work on that side of things. Yeah, and that's really useful to, if you haven't really talked about this on the Stompcast before, because people, unless you've tried coaching and so there's actually coaching in lots of different areas. You have people, ADHD coaches, for example. There's lots of different kinds of coaches, like kind of the difference between that and therapy. So from the coaching side of things, so we kind of come back to where we started this. So you were initially using goal-focused coaching, and you found that people were coming back and they kind of slipped off the bandwagon and they hadn't hit their goals. And then that led you to look at the why. And is it at that point then you're like, actually, there's a different way of doing this?
Yeah.
And did you see that work? Like, have you seen with your coaching? I presume you wouldn't wear the hat today if it didn't work. I've written the book. But like, I'm really keen to hear what did you see from your experience when you changed that approach?
It wasn't a sudden realization, for sure. And of course, like when you do goal setting, when you take that approach with coaching, you do talk about values, of course, like and how they underpin your goals. However, I did find that the more that I really focused on this idea of your priorities, and so you have a really clear list of what they are, and you can set a sort of why, an internal why in your head for a lot of your behaviors and actions or life changes, whatever it is, that there's just that little bit more of a foundation. There's this like Steve Coveney quote, which is, I'm gonna get it wrong, if the ladder is not leaning against the right wall, you just get to the wrong place faster.
Yeah,
you heard that one?
I have, yeah.
So that's all about goals. And my thing is priorities are the ground beneath that ladder. So if the ground is unstable, if it's shaky, if you don't have
like building
that foundation,
a house on rough foundation almost.
Yeah, then you're destined to not work out.
So in
and
a way,
for me,
you could...
myself, I saw myself not achieving goals and how I felt about that and how I felt about my profession then.
Yeah.
Because I didn't want to tell people that, or you know, empower and show people how to achieve their goals.
Yeah, and so
not
in
give
a sense,
them structure to sort of work things out if it didn't go the way they wanted.
Yeah. So in using say a house analogy, you might actually set goals, work towards the goals, either get there and realise you didn't actually want it, or you fail along the way. They feel miserable because you feel like you've failed, but perhaps it was because you weren't really working towards something you really wanted. And it's like, you know, anything in life that you want to achieve, most things will have its challenges and its difficulties. Like when I went to med school, like it's hard. It's if you, you know, get through straight away and you do your 5 years without having to resit, which often people do, you know, it's 5 years of exams and hard work. And you're not really going to do that unless you really care about it, that it's like a genuine priority for you, that career aligns with your values, that what you want in your life, because there's so much mud thrown at you. You wouldn't do it. And sometimes I saw people actually who were in first and second year, even third year at med school, who then left and they dropped out. They left to go and do something else because I think something happened where perhaps they had the realization themselves that actually this is all very well and I'm working towards this thing that I've set myself, but I actually don't want to do this. Is not what I actually what I actually want. And some of that self-discovery in life, and sometimes you've got to try things, but it is nice when you can kind of head in the right direction. I often say to people, if you can figure out even north, south, east or west, which general direction you want to go in life, that's a good enough start most of the time. And I guess so that brings us on to that thought then. It's like, how do you work out what your priorities are? Like, what do you get clients to do, or what do you encourage in the book for people to do to work out, like, what is it that matters? It's quite hard. If you say to someone, what's your priority? They go, well, I don't know. You don't know. You might say, oh, your family or something. These answers, stock answers, or health, family. But that might be. Yeah. But what is your priority?
So one of the first things is really just awareness, right? It's like any other self-development work. You can't do it unless you're aware. And as you say, some people have just never thought about this. You know, I've worked with a big law firm recently, and some of these people had never in their lives thought about any of this self-development stuff, sort of 60 or so. So first step is awareness without judgment. So how can we, you know, get to know ourselves a little bit better and think about who we are away from other people as well? Like you were saying earlier about people that, you know, dropped out of med school, could be that their version of success that they were working towards at that point wasn't defined by them. It was defined by their family or what their friends were doing or, you know, various other things.
Society's definition
of success. So defining what successful looks like to you, and that doesn't really mean, you know, necessarily doing well at something. I think success is much more holistic, right? It's about how we feel internally, it's about how we show up in the world, it's about how we treat other people. It's not necessarily what we do as a job. So going back to those, what are your values, what are your priorities, what isn't a priority for you? So that's always a really big question for people that they maybe haven't necessarily thought about. And then looking at what do you want day to day? So what do you really want your days or your week to look like? How often do you want to be having a stomp like this? You know, what time would you ideally get up? You know, I've got two small children, so ideally is, you know, I say that very, very lightly here. I was an early riser before I had two small children. Now I'm an early riser because of them.
Great, it aligns with your priorities and values.
Does it? I don't generally like to be woken up by like a screaming child, but you know, I'll take it. That's where I am. what do you want your days to look like? You know, ideally in an ideal world, which obviously very few of us have the resources, either, you know, time, money, energy, any of it to make it happen, but looking at what that actually looks like. And then also looking at what more of your long-term plan is. And, you know, in an ideal world, what do you think you'd like to feel like at the end of your life? What do you feel like you would want to have prioritized at the end point? What would you like to, you know, look back on and be really proud of?
I hear
the kind
that
of person you are.
There was a good example that Rohan Chatterjee gave on the Stompcast, and he was saying about the rocking chair analogy and imagining you're like 75 or 80 years old, and if you were sat there in the rocking chair and you're looking back on your life, like, what are the things you'd like to say about yourself? Like, oh, you know, I was a kind person, or I love my family, or I achieved, you know, I managed to run a marathon, whatever it might be, like looking back. And it's quite a good way, because then you go back to your now and think, almost like you're saying the priorities, am I living my priorities to please that 75-year-old self?
We actually have this in the journal. So we have it's called Looking Back on My Life. It's a very similar exercise that I use with clients, which is this, and with myself all the time as well. So doing those two things and then looking at whether they align, right? Because what we want in the present, or what we might want our week to look like, can often be quite different from what we want at the end of our lives. You know, if you want to be a top CEO and you want to make billions of pounds as your long-term view, but day to day you kind of want to like wake up at 10 a.m. and hang out with your family quite a lot, those two things don't merge very well. So it's sort of looking at, where am I willing to make sacrifices in the short term in order to achieve long-term stuff? Because obviously for me, I make sacrifices with spending time with my children because my work is, I love my work and it's very meaningful to me. And where do we want to make sacrifices in the long term for the short term? So again, I make sacrifices with my work so that in the short term I can spend time with my children, and that always changes for me.
Perhaps that's where the challenges are, that sometimes your priorities, as much as we'd love them to line up, they don't necessarily always line up. Like having children and, I don't know, running Ironman competitions or triathlons, whatever, they're not necessarily aligned in the sense that, like, for example, you're going up early with your children, but you're like, oh, I need to go and do a 5K swim or something at that time. It's like those two things don't necessarily marry, but both those things can be quite important to you.
Yeah.
So perhaps, yeah, that you have to actually... Maybe that's where some discomfort comes from, is we never actually head on make a decision about which priorities but perhaps we have to let go or adjust. We're trying to have our cake and eat it, but because we can't, that creates a discomfort. Or perhaps subconsciously we're aware that we're not actually able to have it all. You know, you can't have it all. It's like kind of wanting to have the hustle and bustle of central London, but also wanting to live in a quiet neighbourhood with no neighbours. Like, it doesn't really, unless you're very fortunate to live in Kensington with a massive Buckingham Palace and a huge garden around you.
Still around you, still the police sirens. I think this idea of balance can be quite unhelpful for people. So they're like, oh, I really want this great work-life balance. And lots of people come to me saying that, I really want a work-life balance. And I always say that balance is a bit of a myth because priorities do conflict. you know, even values can fix. You know, some things that we might want, we might have to make sacrifices for. And it is about accepting that maybe sometimes your life will feel very out of balance, and that maybe that's all right. Maybe that's a normal experience, as opposed to thinking that everyone is waking up at 5 a.m. and feeling really awake and meditating and doing all the exercise they want, spending really quality time with their children, where their children are not driving them mad, you know, making a smoothie, going, you know, enjoying every minute of their work and so on and so forth. The reality, as we said at the very beginning, is that life can be really challenging, and we can't expect it to be, to match up to this idea of perfection the entire time, which of course social media does.
And at the stage, I was going to ask you about, because I mean, you've obviously, through your experience in writing and working in magazines and so on, and being just in the space of seeing society's projection of ideas, whatever that might be about, I wonder what you think about, you know, the effect of the perfect life vision that you see perhaps on either social media or projected, even the perfect person. There's a lot now, and I can't about this. I think one of the biggest challenges we face is that right now, you're either a really good person or you're a bad person. And actually, human beings are mostly, you've got a bell curve, you've got extremely good people on one edge, really, really few people that you're kind of angels on earth who never do anything wrong. And then you've got your other, thankfully, very small number of genuinely evil, horrible people that sit on the other side of the bell curve. But most of the people in the middle are just human beings. They have their good points, their bad points. They have their good days, they get hangry at times, they make mistakes. Sometimes they're brilliant people, sometimes they do things that they regret. And I just wonder how much, like, the projection of perfection affects people's priorities or what they want to do with their life, because they're trying to also compare against this idea of a perfect person. I haven't met a perfect person yet. I met a lot of different people. Thankfully, that very few bad people I have. I mean, I've worked in a hospital. We look after everyone. I've looked after murderers. You know, I've looked after genuinely people who've done really bad things. But I do worry for young people, because not only are you looking at, like, okay, this is the career you should have, but it's also like, you must be a perfect person. You need to be doing yoga at 5 in the morning. You need to be doing all these different things. You just never make mistakes. Like, where do you think that comes from? Do you think some of that, I kind of try not to put words in your mouth, but do we think some of that is actually coming from what we're projecting out, like what we're telling people, like across all television, media, social media? Do you think that is part of it, or has it just always been there? Does everyone like to pretend they're perfect?
Right? It's both. I think we have an innate primal desire to fit in with people and to seem good and to be accepted as part of a group, and that goes back to when we were in hunter-gatherer societies, and if we did something and we were rejected from the group, we would die, because obviously, like, that's we true. Were not in the protection of
that's
that
true.
So this idea of rejection and the desire to fit in, part of it's a real primal thing within us. And then, like everything with modern life, you know, our brains are not quite there in terms of supporting us through the challenges that we face. And that, you know, this idea of perfection and everything that we're bombarded with is one of those, for sure.
And it's something like about accepting and being good enough. My dad actually very wisely said that good enough is good enough a lot of the time. Like, honestly, I've had people who are, you know, I said the story before, but the psychiatrist, the beautiful dogs come to say, hello, chap, you're beautiful, aren't you?
He's gorgeous.
How are you? You've got a lovely coat, aren't you? Yeah, your little spaniel with a beautiful coat. Hello. Hello. That's the beauty of being outside as well. You not only get to hit nature, you see all the dogs running around. You've just got a pack of dogs here going, going past. But yeah, this I had a, it's just one that comes to my mind quite often, is this psychiatrist who I know relatively well. It's a consultant psychiatrist, done amazing. I mean, it's so hard to be a consultant in anything in the medical field. You've trained for years, you've done fantastic, you're helping so many people. And this person's like, oh yeah, but I find social media really triggering, because I see other consultant psychiatrists doing more papers or presenting more conferences. And you're like, Jesus, when does it end, man? When does it bloody end? I mean, like, literally, you're helping people, you're literally saving, changing lives, and yet you still feel inadequate because you look at other people and think, oh, but they're doing more.
Yeah. And we'll do it.
It doesn't end,
right?
Does it?
We'll do it.
It doesn't end.
That comparison, one technique which we talk about in coaching, and I talk about a lot within the priorities method, is this idea of trying to turn envy into insight. Have you heard that before? So, you know, when we are feeling envious, when you know, your consultant
jealousy,
friend, and jealous,
jealousy,
when you're feeling jealous of someone, you're seeing that thing on social media, then trying your level best, because obviously it's incredibly hard to do, to think about sort of what am I envious of? What is it there that's triggering me? Is it that I want to be doing more papers? or do I just think I should be doing more papers, you know? And again, it comes back to those priorities and values and like, what do you actually want? And if you have that clearer idea underneath, then you can have more of that insight. So when I look at maybe social media sort of stars or influencers, and I'll feel envious of them, and it will be like, why am I envious? I'm not envious because I don't want that life. I don't want to be that, you know, I don't want that to be my work and my life. What am I envious of then? Am I envious of like the amount of travel? Because maybe I feel like I'm not getting, you know, that kind of travel within this period of my life. And how can I maybe build more of that into my life? Whether that's maybe not being able to just go off and, you know, into the middle of nowhere without my children,
but maybe
it's more about how can I find travel in other ways in my life. How can I travel more within my mind? How can I travel, broaden my experiences whilst also within the confines of what my life is right now?
You're right though, anytime you compare and it's triggering, you're triggered in a jealous or envious sense. It isn't about them, it's actually all about you, because you're only triggered because of that. It's like this is actually really like blunt and raw example, but often you'll find that when people say troll someone, you'll very rarely find someone trolling someone else that's doing better than you. They'll troll you if they're doing worse than you. That is very raw, and I don't believe in that. So, like, I mean, if you take it as an example, generally there's a reason why they're trying to drag you down. Someone who's you know, Barack Obama's not dragging down some, you know, low-level politician that's doing whatever. He's doing his own thing, whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a two-way thing. I think it's also looking once other people are triggered by you or whatever mean to you sometimes in life, you just got to think like, there's probably a reason. They've got their own stuff going on. It's not actually about me.
We think everything's about us because we're really self-obsessed because
everyone has spotlight syndrome. We've all got a spotlight on us. And one of the cruelest things I'll say, but you know, depression for example, is that through rumination you become so obsessed with your own problems that you genuinely believe to the deepest level that you are the only person suffering problems.
Absolutely.
It doesn't mean you don't care about other people's struggles, but you genuinely feel that you're carrying the weight of your world. Avicii, famous saying, I'm carrying the weight of the world but I only have two hands. And that's what it feels like, isn't it? But of course, you're not carrying the weight of the
world.
You're
not carrying it.
Many other people carrying other issues.
And this actually, those kinds of thoughts are something we talk about a lot in the priorities method, because of the mindset coaching. So that's also, you know, thinking when you are depressed. I've been depressed. I was when I was younger. Your brain patterns change, right? So you start having those thoughts, and they become very habitual thoughts. So they move from this prefrontal cortex, front part of the brain, into very automatic thoughts. And so a lot of it is about shift it. I mean, you'll know all of this, of course,
well,
from your trainings, but
tackling those
and changing
things.
Them, and it takes so much energy to change thoughts, right? Because the brain is so lazy, it hates doing new stuff.
Patterns is that the snow falls, you walk through the snow and you create paths in the snow. The next person comes along, that your next neuron firing will just fire that signal along the same path, because it's the easy path to path of least resistance.
Path of least resistance.
It's the path that we take.
We do that. I talk a lot about similar one, water going along rock. So, you know, if it goes over rock a couple of times, nothing happens, but then it makes grooves, and then the water just goes down those grooves.
It never goes anywhere else.
And that's the same with our thoughts.
And the longer you allow it to happen, the longer the grooves form, the deeper. And eventually you've got a river, and it's much harder to change the direction of the water.
Yeah.
So as we come to the end of part one then, I wonder if you could just recap or just give a little summary then of what, you know, what we're talking about when we are working out our priorities, and just a couple of those tips about, just recapping some of those tips about what are my priorities and how do you kind of start focusing on them in your day-to-day life.
So again, it's that idea of awareness, so building with what's truly of value to me, what's important to me. Is fun a priority? Is movement a priority? You know, what are the priorities in my life? And making a little list of those. And the way to find them is often to look back on the last year and think about, you know, what you enjoyed, what you didn't, what brought you purpose, what didn't, and so on. And then once you've got a list, I always suggest writing it down, because obviously there's the journal in which you can do that.
Yeah,
but, you know, grab a scrap of paper just as good. Or
where can
they
get the journal, of course?
Where can they get the journal? You can get the journal on our website, thepriorities.method.com, or you can get it at Soho House.
So we're going to put the link in the show notes as well, of course.
Thank you. And I'm going to send you a copy tomorrow as well.
Thank you.
So you've got them written down, and then it's about orientating yourself as much as possible. So that you're living in line with them.
And I think it's being aware, almost of what we said right at the end there, that actually it's going to take time and constantly putting yourself, almost like a toddler running off in the wrong direction. You have to redirect them to get in the right direction.
Absolutely.
Because you're going to go along those same trodden paths because that's what your brain knows. And the same with tackling things like rumination, for example. You need to practice it and keep going. When you notice rumination starting, fine, no problem, not no judgments, not reacting to it, putting yourself back on track to the thoughts that you want to have, or distracting yourself with activities or other things and getting yourself off. And the more that you do that, the easier it is to be done, the easier it is to redirect your thoughts, and actually eventually you find that you start finding new paths.
Yeah, absolutely, that you've built for yourself. And just, you know, being kind to yourself when life doesn't go the way that you thought it was going to go, when you do find yourself even, you know, having very negative thoughts or an outlook on something, not compounding that by then, you know, being annoyed or stressed at yourself for being stressed. There's a very you know, emotional, secondary emotional disturbances, trying to get rid of those as much as possible.
Learn to let go. Brilliant. Well, we'll come to the end of part one there. Thank you. In part two, we're going to talk a little bit further about, perhaps, you know, we talk about the priorities, but we're going to talk a little bit about goals broadly, and as to, you know, can we truly let them? Because I'm sure there are people listening going, oh, but I've got my goals and I don't really want to let that go, and they're important to me. So we're going to delve a little bit more into goals and think about, yeah, the pros and cons. Are they useful? Are they less useful? And come to a bit of a conclusion on that. Right, guys, we'll see you all in part two very soon. Goodbye.
If you're looking for more mental fitness content, check out my book, The Mind Manual, Mental Fitness Tools for Everyone, and A Better Day and A Better Day Journal for Children. And if you have a man in your life, or indeed if you're a man listening to this, make sure you check out Mettle, the app, M-E-T-T-L-E, mental fitness tools that are designed for men. Download now.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, parents. Greenlight is here to take one big thing off your to-do list, teaching your kids about money. With a Greenlight debit card and money app of their own, kids and teens learn to earn, save, and invest. You can send money instantly, set flexible controls, and get real-time notifications of your kids' money activity. Set up chores and put allowance on autopilot to reward them for their hard work. Then learn about the world of money together. Get 1 month free when you sign up at greenlight.com/podcast.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.